Welcome to the Audible Ecstasy Podcast. Each week we sit around and discuss the music from our past. Sometimes we agree.
I call it iconic. It's a 10. That riff is it's incredible.
Clearly a 10. This is one of the most iconic songs of the 80s.
Iconic from start to finish.
And sometimes we disagree.
The song sounds like something you might hear at your aunt's funeral.
The absolute worst lyrics ever.
With the juvenile flush on that one, I'm not dealing with that. I'm not dealing with that crap.
Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. All right, guys, we are back with another Audible Ecstasy podcast, and this week it's my pick. We've gone back to do a little Hank. Some Hank Williams Jr., guys. Wild Streak. Y'all had a couple of weeks to give this thing a listen, and I'm looking forward to hear what your thoughts are of some 80s Hank, late 80s Hank. You guys ready to do this?
I'm ready, Anthony. Let's hear your tagline, man.
Talk to me, woman. Been talking business all day, and now I'm ready to play. It's the Audible Ecstasy Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
All right, this is pretty good.
Good Lord. All right, well, let's kick this thing off. The title track, first song, Wild Streak. Man, so I think that there's a missed opportunity here. This should have been a single. This was not a single from the record. This is a heck of a way to start an album. Granted, you can feel the 80s production in this one. I understand that. But I think it's a rocking way to start the album. He kicks it off just with that perfect Hank Williams Jr. grit. It's something you'd expect from this legendary country musician. I mean, outlaw. This is outlaw music for sure. Song's catchy, easy to sing along with, sets the pace for the delivery of some classic tunes. I think it's an excellent opener. I gave this one an 8. Chris, what did you think about Wild Streak?
Well, it is a very dated song, I have to say. Like this feels like it came out of the Roadhouse soundtrock, don't y'all think? I can see Swayze throwing some punches with this playing in the background.
That's right.
You know, it's a little theatrical. He probably wouldn't like me saying that. You know, like he kind of has like a theatrical feel to him. This song, I think it almost, you know, you guys get that,
Mr. Williams Jr. Come on out, please. Chris is talking trash. Come on out here.
That. I don't think that's trash. It's just
Before you get into that, why would theatrical be a bad thing?
I don't think it would, but I think he would. I don't think he would appreciate that. Why do you think he would think that? Because he probably thinks theaters for a bunch of pussies would be my guess. That's
probably
his mindset.
I would think he'd be surprised.
You think he'd like that?
I don't know. I think he might be different than people give him credit for. I don't know.
Okay, fair enough.
We don't know the man is all I'm saying. Is he may go to the theater every night for all we know. So.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised it wasn't single too. I gave it a 7. I think it's a great way to start the album.
It's great. Awesome. All right, Anthony, what do you think about Wild Streak?
This is a solid lead-in song. Definitely got a lot of the pop 80s sound to it, which is what I said. But it works with his voice. He does a great job with this song. It grew on me a lot this week. Great chorus, very singable, very catchy. I like the way it closes out as well. It's got a really cool close. I gave it an 8. Thought it was excellent. So
awesome. Perfect. You guys were very close on this one. I kind of figured it'd be close to that range anyway. Track number 2. If the South would have won. Hit it, Chris.
And we wouldn't have no killers getting off free. If they were proven guilty, then they would swing quickly. Instead of writing books and smiling on TV, we'd all
for president of the southern states. The day young Skinner died, we'd show our southern pride. If the South would have won, we'd have had it made. A little Dixieland, boys.
Exactly what I was going to go with. If the South would have won, has that Dixieland vibe going through it with the horn section playing. First single from this album, fantastic song in general, easy to sing along with. Southern message, it probably rings true to this day to a lot of people, I would imagine. Toe Tapper, easy to sing along with. One of the great songs from the 80s from him, a staple in his live sets for many years. Once again, it's excellent. I gave it an 8. Chris, what'd you think about it? The South would have won.
Yeah, it's definitely a fun tune. I did like that Dixieland. You know, all the horns that he gets in this, man. It sounds fantastic. You know, I kind of like how he has something positive to say about every state in the South in this song. And I know a lot of people look at this and would think, racist, whatever. But that's not really what it is if you listen to it at all. He's not talking about anything like racial or anything. It's more about just kind of his heritage, Southern pride kind of like mentality with this song. I think it's excellent as well. And I gave it an 8 too.
Anthony, if the South would have won.
I think I'm too woke for this song.
No, I'm just kidding. Probably. Bring it on.
Fair well might be.
I'm living in this, white collar Raleigh area down here. Maybe I got too woke in my old
age.
Very
white collar.
Yes, yep. But anyways, Wikipedia at the South would have won is a song written and recorded by Hank, of course. It was released in July of 1988. It was the first single. And it said the song reached number 8 on the Billboard Hot Country Singles and Tracks chart. So, not a lot of information on this album. So, a little bit here and there. Personally, guys, you know, this was a hard one for me to review. Because I want to be fair to the song. But I don't love the subject matter. But I also want to know that, let everybody know that it's not because it's the South. If the North would have won and given us all lattes, I'd be feeling the same way. If the East or West would have done the same thing, I'd be doing the same thing. I just don't like kitschy songs like this. They feel kind of patronizing to me. I don't know why that is. It just kind of bugs me. So I still gave the song a 7. I think it's a great tune. I really do love the music in it, though. Hank sounds great. It's very singable. It's very catchy. There's a lot of positives in it. I love the Dixieland music in it, too. The New Orleans jazzy sound he's got going. It's a lot of cool stuff. So I just don't really love the South would have won stuff. It just kind of gets on my nerves a little bit, but I know we had a lot.
How do you think
of,
this would?
What's that?
How do you think this would go over at some of these Free Palestine marches up in New York City right now and stuff? Somebody drove by in a big lifted up, jacked up truck, cranking this up.
I don't know, man. That's a little insensitive. But the song. It's a great song. I don't know. I don't want people to come off thinking I'm some, you know, hippie loving woke SOB out there. You know, I do have a balance in my life, and I realize the merit of this song and how good this song is and the meaning behind it. But at the same time, I don't really love parts of that either. You know, I get a little tired of it sometimes. So I'm just trying to be as fair as I can and not alienate half our audience.
Dude, it's all in how you hear it, man. Fair it's like I sent out that text. It's good to yours is good. If it's bad to yours is bad.
It's a tough song because I like the song. It's not that I hate the song. I feel like it feels a little misguided at times.
I think you have to look at the year it came out and what kind of music Hank does. I mean, it's Southern rock kind of stuff.
It's outlaw music.
And it's from 88. Yeah. There wasn't such a divisive culture that we lived in when this song came out either, I don't think. So,
I don't know.
You got to weigh all that in.
I know.
And like I said, like all he does is speak positives of every state. That's all he really does. He's like, yeah, I got beautiful women in this state to make great violins in this state, to make moonshine in this state. And just have what it's about what he loved about growing up in the South, I think is kind of all that song's really about.
I mean, we technically grew up in the South too. I mean, we're more Southern than anything else. Virginia's in that weird little spot, isn't it, where it's like, it's technically the South, but it's also sort of North.
I think it's kind of like Roanoke.
Yeah, I think there's
honestly.
Yeah, well, that's just kind of like the northern half is north.
Yeah. So, anyways, great song. I gave it a 7. I do like it. Yeah. I just like
fair
I said.
Enough. Yeah. All right. Well, let's roll us up to track number 3. It's called "What You Don't Know Won't Hurt You."
it's getting hard to do anything they don't know about. Oh, they learn your habits. You had corned beef and cabbage last night at your girlfriend's house. And when we went upstairs, I wondered as we walked into her room, is this place bugged? Do you think, my love, they know all the things we do? Well, what you don't know.
All right, What You Don't Know Won't Hurt You. And I love that guitar riff that kicks this song off and carries on throughout this entirety of this this song. I love the message Hank was putting out back then in 1988. And you know, in the thoughts of government, how much is advanced nowadays? I mean, good Lord, there ain't nothing you can't do that they don't know about this day and time. And he's predicting the future to an extent. I mean, it rings truer now than it ever has before. Nonetheless, I think the song is a great tune. Easily singable, tainted by 80s production. I gave it a 7. It's great. Chris, what do you think about What You Don't Know Won't Hurt You?
Yeah, it's really like the music. I kind of like it. It's got a good groove to it as far as that goes. It's a fun song. Hank, let me tell you, he's a songwriter, right? I mean, you're not going to get like Pavarotti sounds out of Hank Williams. You're just not, man. But it fits this kind of song right here. Now, when we get a little later in the album, I may not agree with that. But for now, I feel like his vocals fit the kind of music he's got. And Anthony, you're going to hate this when I say this, but I swear, man, there's times when it kind of reminds me of Buffett a little bit. This song in particular, this feels like an 80s Buffett song. If you listen to this again and just try to picture vocals or Buffett's vocals over this, I could totally see him singing a song like this. It's just kind of like you said you don't like kitsch. Buffett's not opposed to kitsch.
It's not kitsch that I'm talking about. I'm talking about with the other song. It's not that. I like kitschy songs. I like Cheeseburger. Okay, I think those are fun songs. It's just certain songs, like the South one, it just kind of rubbed me the wrong way sometimes. That's it.
But for this one in particular, I could just hear his vocals on it the way it. Let me play another, just a little clip of it again. Just listen and just think, okay, how would Buffett sound singing this? Just 1 second, man.
They check your charger card and it's getting hard to do anything they don't know about. Oh, they learn your habits. You had corned beef and cabbage last night at your girlfriend's house.
Just to me, I could hear him doing a song like, I don't know what it is, man. Anyway, I gave it a 7. I think it's a great song. For some reason, maybe it's just because he recently passed and it's been on my mind a little bit, but I could totally hear him singing this song.
Yeah. Sort of.
I knew you wouldn't like that. What do you think, Jimmy? You hear that at all?
I hear it on another song too. I mean, I can hear Buffett doing something because it has that 80s thing. I think something reminds me of Gypsies in the Palace on this album, and we'll get to that. Okay. But yeah, dude, I mean, it has that vibe, or it has that styling. Buffett went through a great, fun lyrical journey in his 80s, for sure. I mean, guys, some of his songs are nothing but adventures, and some of that stuff is cheesy, for sure. But,
in a fun way, though. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah, it was fun.
It
was nothing negative.
It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not saying nothing negative about that. He just had some good stuff back in those days.
And this was like a fun, nothing serious, kind of like, I don't know. I agree.
It's definitely not a serious song. All right, let's go to track number 4. Oh, and actually, Anthony got to refer to this. Hell, we went off on a tangent here. Anthony, what you think about What You Don't Know Won't Hurt
You? I mean, I don't have anything to add. I gave it 5. I think it's good. I've heard better, heard worse. Tropes in the song are pretty cliche to me by now, but it's nothing new. So it's kind of where I stand with it. Plus, I don't know. Hank doesn't sound as good on this song as he does on a lot of other ones either, so.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to track number 4. It's going to be You're Gonna Be a Sorry Man.
Is it Aha? Maybe this is Aha? Depeche Mode. No, that's what I'm thinking.
All right, guys. So you're going to be a sorry man. This is what I wrote. Holy moly, this song reeks of 80s production. It reminds me of a song that would have been in a cheesy 80s movie with Eddie Murphy or Nick Nolte. The song is easy to get into, sing along with, but with the production is not doing any justice at all for this aging tune. The drum tone tells me Phil Collins might have been behind the electric drum kit, but we know better. I think the song is between good and very good. I do like the song. It's just, you know, I can't give it much more than that. It's 5.5. Chris, what'd you think about You're Gonna Be a Sorry Man?
You guys remember
this? Wait. This isn't your flush?
It's not, no.
Wow. Oh, it's okay. Good.
It only gets worse from here for him.
Well, really?
The album actually
gets better for me after this.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. You like that old Tommy Morrill sounding bullshit.
Well, I do like the old coming, country. That's what I grew up on. That old
first of all,
stuff, so.
Don't you dare go with Merle and bullshit in the same sentence.
I shouldn't have said Merle. It's not Merle. Because Merle's more outlaw. Regardless.
Sorry.
It totally threw me off my game. And I'm like, okay.
Sorry.
You're good at that, man.
Well, I was sitting here going, okay,
you butt in a lot, Anthony.
Here comes the flush. And I was like, wait a minute, the flush. What? So, sorry.
All right. So, you guys remember when you'd wake up on Christmas morning, circa like 1985, and go downstairs, and there'd be like a Casio keyboard sitting in front of the Christmas tree there. I'm pretty sure Hank had that experience and pulled the Casio keyboard out and hit the, like, one of those synthesizer keys, and this is how this song started. It's so dated. I mean, it feels like something on a B-reel for a Miami Vice episode that got cut, left on the cutting room floor. Here's the thing. It is kind of fun, and I do kind of like the horn section in it. It starts out lame as hell. I mean, there's no denying that. But it is not my flesh. It was close. But I gave it a 5. I think it's good.
All right, Anthony, what'd you think about You're Gonna Be a Sorry Man?
I mean, this song does not work for Hank and his vocals. It sounds like something a C-tier pop star in the 80s would have created, not a rebel like Hank. It's very bland and very generic, very dated. It's probably my first 4 in history. It's a meh for me. It's a 4.
His first 4 in history?
Probably is, man. I don't think I've given many 4s. I might have given a 4 to, were we doing the rating on the 51? What was the Van Halen one where he did apolitical blues? Were we doing the new ratings on that?
That's OU812.
I think I gave a 5.
A long time ago, man. I can't remember. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a 4, man. This one's a meh.
Wow. But this is like your lowest rated song in like 3 years, in other words.
I mean, from here forward, it's like 8s, 9s, and 7s. I mean, it gets solid from here forward. I really, the back half of this album is amazing.
Man,
if you just started at Love MD, if you just started at Love MD and Wild Streak and skipped the other two before it, it's been a flawless album. It's been a classic. But anyways, that's me personally.
All right, let's go.
It is just you personally. That's true.
Track 5. It's called Love MD. Hit it.
Everybody play now. Oh yeah. Knocked out of my breath since I fell for you. I've come down with a heartbreak blues. It's gonna take a doctor with a special degree, 'cause I need a love doctor. I need a love MD. I need a root doctor.
All right, so Love MD, man, I think it's got a nice drum guitar lick to start this song off with. This is one of those songs that Hank allows his baritone voice to show a little emotion. The song is just to sit back, sip a little whiskey, and relax. I can hear him hanging out with the guys from ZZ Top playing this one. I think this would fit right into 80s ZZ Top. Lyrically, the song doesn't go outside of simple, believe, I do believe this is the nature of this tune. I think it's an enjoyable listen, and I think it's very good. I gave this one a 6. Chris, what'd you think about Love MD?
Yeah, it sounds like a ripoff of Money for Nothing by Dire Straits to me.
I heard it's ZZ Top. I didn't hear Money for Nothing.
Listen to that bass line. That's the song, man. This is the exact same song. I know he's trying to do his pimp route on this one, I guess. I mean, Love MD stuff, but it just didn't land for me, guys. I like, and I get it. You're right, Jimmy. It's like a sit back, drink a glass of whiskey song. But that's it, man. That's all it is. Man, he barely sings. He just kind of talks through it, and it's like, dum, dum, but yeah, Love MD. I mean, it's just like, I don't know if I can rate that very high. I gave it a 4. It's a meh for me. I mean, I know okay. It's, you know,
flush. No flush on this one? Mm-mm. Okay.
No, jeez. I got 3
fours. I love
three
you got to go to get a flush on this stuff.
Well, I got one I'm debating. I might give it a 3 on the fly, but right now
that's fine.
It's not, so.
All right, fair enough, Anthony.
It's you know, you keep looking for it. You brought me down to earth. That song just straight sucks, man. That's just all there is to it.
It's a great song, man.
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, my God. All right, Lord. Anthony, Love MD.
Podcast is over now. This is where the album starts to get good and consistent for me. Really digging this tune, very bluesy and groovy with a guitar tone that sounds amazing. I love the guitar tone in this one. Hank also has a voice that's perfect for a song like this. I gave it an 8. I think it's an excellent tune, man. I'm digging this tune a lot. So,
oh, yeah. All right. Let's go to track number 6. It's called Early in the Morning and Late at Night. All right, Early in the Morning, Late at Night, I think now we're going back to a little bit more of the frantic Hank Jr. we all know and love. This song's a rocker. Second single released from the album. It certainly has a little of that later 80s production. And I think it works on this tune. I mean, Chuck Berry would be proud. This absolutely has a Chuck Berry riff all the way through it. This one is easy to get into. Sing along yet again. This one gets the head bobbing. I mean, it even has a sax solo. Nice bluesy shuffle going on. Everything about the song works for my ears. I think this one's an excellent song. I gave it an 8. Chris, what'd you think about Early in the Morning, Late at Night?
Yeah, it sounds a whole lot like All My Rowdy Friends. I don't. Which song came first? Do you know?
All My Rowdy Friends.
Yeah, it's a good tune, man. And I feel like this is his wheelhouse. This kind of like Southern rock, bluesy,
happy
with a little
stuff, yeah.
Yeah, with some of the horns involved. This is what he needs to focus on with his music, I feel like. Again, it has a little bit of that Roadhouse vibe, a little bit dated, but for the most part, it's kind of what I like about him. I gave it a 7. Yeah, I think it's a great song.
All right. Anthony, Early in the Morning, Late at Night.
Yeah, Wikipedia said this song was written by Troy Seals and Frank Myers. And it was the second single, like Jimmy said. It said it reached number 14 on the Billboard Hot Country Singles and Tracks chart. I wrote Taking It Up a Notch, getting back to that rockabilly sound, like he's channeling Jerry Lee Lewis or something. And it works for him. You know, this is the kind of song you can kind of turn on, get lost in, just kind of boogie around the room to, you know. It's a great tune. I gave it a 7, too. And I keep thinking of Top Gun when I hear this song, like that scene where they're doing Great Balls of Fire in Top Gun. This song would have been perfect in that movie too. Either one of those movies when they do that scene. But yeah. So I give it a 7. I think it's a great tune. Right. And I do enjoy the sax solo too a lot. I forgot to mention that too, because Jimmy mentioned the sax. I was like, yeah, I do like that sax solo a lot, and it's really good. It's
you know, when you look at the personnel on this album, he's got a ton of people doing horns. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Like 8 different people doing horns on this. So he must have had a big brass section with him.
Well, you got at the Southwood one that took majority of that, just so you know.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Because it would have been a Dixieland
keyboard
band.
Synthesizer people on here too. It's 5 different people playing that.
That doesn't shock me either.
I wonder if he like fired a bunch of people. Do you think that's it? Like, no, why would you need that many people to play synthesizer?
This is back when this is Studio Musician Nashville right here. I'm just telling you right now.
Because
he had a bunch of studio. This wasn't Hank Williams Jr. band backing him in this. This is the studio musicians.
Yeah, he didn't have a band, does he? He just brings people on the road with him? Or
he does have a band, but he does not record with the band.
Okay.
From what I understand, it's a lot of this, the Nashville tradition. A lot of these guys record with session musicians. There's a money thing to this. They just pay the session musicians once, but if they get a writing credit, guess what? They're paid for life. So I think that's probably how Hank got as much money as he did, I would imagine. I don't know. I mean, I don't know the lore behind it. I know that, you know, he's a solo artist forever. So who knows? But I have a feeling that has a lot to play with it. You pay a session musician $50 an hour back in the 80s or whatever it was, and you get 2 or 3 songs out of them versus you pay somebody residuals for life.
It's kind of like hiring a temp to play a song.
Realistically, yeah. But he gets the best of the best to play, and I guess, you know, for the money.
I mean, Mac McAnally was a session musician.
He was a session guy.
Yeah.
There's a ton of people out there as session guys that make great. John Five, my prime example, I throw out there every day. John Five, he's one of the greatest guitarists of all time.
Not to derail the podcast, but like, why would you want to do that if you were talented enough? Like, why would you say, okay, I'm going to waste my time coming here getting $50 and give you my talent? John Five's a hell of a musician, man. Like,
well, John
why would
doing
he,
50.
Why would
he's
he take
doing for thousands?
Okay. Well, you know, like,
Chris, let's put it this way. Like today, I think some session musicians get anywhere from like 200 and up per hour for the session. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't, I mean, when we say per hour, it might take them 5 or 6 hours just to cut one track. It might take them 12 hours to cut one track. So it's a pretty big payday for a session musician.
And
a lot of people live session to session.
And you don't have to
they're not a writer. If you're not a writer, because writers is where the money is
in the Nashville
world right now. But if you're a session musician and you're needed, that's your 9 to 5, or, you know, I put that in quote signs because that's your bread and butter. You're waiting for the phone call from a producer saying, hey, I need you on some guitar work down here. Can you come do it? Be here in an hour.
And
boom,
you get
there.
And you get to play music, which is what you want to be doing.
It's
and
your,
you don't have
it's
to go
your love
on the road.
And desire.
You get to be close to your home. I mean, it's a win-win if you really want to be a session musician.
It absolutely is. And think about it this way. Some of
this
the session
like
musicians
there's a lot of money in it for
well,
me. Like,
Chris,
like
enough
if you're good enough to be in a band, like I would say, nah, I'm not interested in that.
Some people don't want to travel. Some people don't want the tour. Some people like being able to say, I get to go home to my wife and kids every single day, and I still get to bring home a paycheck. Some of these session guys make
gotta be sporadic though, right? I mean, it's gotta be sporadic work.
I would imagine that it depends on how good you are.
It
could be every day,
especially in Nashville. There's a lot of solo artists in Nashville that need like backing bands. I bet you in Nashville you can do a pretty good bank if you're a good musician, session musician.
I agree. And like I said, not that I think these folks are scared to play live, but some people just get comfortable. I tried to do that YouTube thing and play guitar, and I always screwed up, but I can sit around the house by myself, no thoughts about it, just kind of just wear it out.
To go back to Mac McAnally, but he was kind of a stay-at-home dad for a little bit in the 80s or whatever, and I think he did a lot of session work and stayed home with his kids until he grew up, and then when the kids were grown up, Buffett said, hey, come out on the road with me, and in the 90s came out on the road with Buffett and stayed with him ever since. So,
yes,
I mean...
I think the music industry had tons of money back then. This is long. That predates Pro Tools. This predates everything. This predates, you know, you can't just make the, you know, a computer do all the recording for you now. Back in these days, this is reel to reel. So, this is pretty digital.
I mean, he's got 6 different guitar players on this album, too. I mean, he's got a ton of personnel that you
yeah,
really should only need like
work.
Yeah.
Session
well,
work.
No, maybe there's one song that requires a certain kind of guitarist. One song requires a certain kind of guitarist. You know, and that's what he brings those guys in for. It's like, this guy would be perfect to play I'm Just a Man, but this guy would be perfect to play the Southwood of One, and he brings those people in to play those songs. So
true. It could have been the days he recorded. I'm not sure how long it took him to record this album. I mean, if he recorded this over the period of 6 months, 5 months, I would imagine that he probably went through quite a few different musicians. That wouldn't make sense. All right, kids, now that we've derailed, let's get back on track. Let's go to track number 7, I'm Just a Man. Hit it, Chris.
Song that killed the podcast.
I'm just a man.
Goulet.
I breathe and I bleed. Yes, I've got feelings. I can hear and I can see. And you are the lady. Brings them out in me, making me feel special. Oh, that's your specialty. 'Cause you let me be me, and I let you be you. Hey, don't that sound so?
All right, so now I'm going to say this. I'm Just a Man is a step back into classic country. This could have fallen right out of 50s or 60s country. A little bit better production than that back in those days, for sure. I think it's more of a heartfelt tune. Hank's vocals are fantastic. That subtle steel guitar in the background sounds fantastic to my ears. Sure, it's slow song, but it works. The guitar solo sounds just like something Vince Gill would have pulled off back in the day. Because Vince, as we all know, is a heck of a guitarist.
And good vocalist,
really,
too.
He's known for vocals, Chris, but a lot of people don't think about him as a shredder. He was a player, dude. He was a player. And he still is to this day. But nonetheless, I think this is great in pure country. I give this one a 7. Can't wait to hear this one. Chris, kill it.
Chris's Flush of the Week.
One of the best songs on the album.
Yeah, it's great.
It's not the best, but it's a good song.
One of the best. I didn't say it was
Talk
the
to me,
best.
Chris. Talk to me.
It sucks, man. I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's just like slow and drags, and he's not a good vocalist. I'm a bump this down to 3.5, I think. That seems about right for this song.
What's a 3.5?
Well, it's between bad and meh.
Oh, my bad. All right, Anthony.
That's all I got.
I'm Just a Man.
It's not good. I mean, he's trying to be Conway Twitty, but he doesn't have the vocals, man. I mean, that's just what it is.
My opening line, Hank sounds great on vocals.
Yeah, he does.
Exactly what I said. He is delivering the mournfulness on this one, and it works. I really like the song. Solid tune. It's an 8. It's excellent, man. I'm digging this one. It's got that classic country sound to it that I like so much. I grew up on this kind of music. In my house, this was the kind of music I was playing a lot of times with my dad. In fact, I think I sent him this song from YouTube when I heard it. So I guess it brings back a lot of memories to me, too, hearing this. Because when I go visit my family over in Tacoma and everything, we'd have Hee-Haw on and stuff like this on all the time, too. So maybe it just brings some fuzzy memories back, too. But I really like this song. But I think Hank sounds great. He's got a great voice. He can do anything. He really can.
Dude, this is pure Hank. Yeah, I agree.
I'm glad.
I mean, it's not rocking.
Y'all
Hank,
would just have nothing
think.
But a slobber fest if it weren't for me, wouldn't you?
I've given one song. If I gave my first 4 in freaking history on this thing,
that's true.
Anthony did do give.
I have been fair to this album. More so maybe than
which
some other
ones.
Which
one you give a 4, or you're going to be a sorry man?
You're going to be a sorry man.
That was pretty bad.
I'm saying, but I really do like the George Jones classic country sound, man. I really do. I enjoy listening to it.
All right, let's rock this up to track number 8, Social Call. Hit it.
I want to make love in your bedroom. Wouldn't that be a hot scene?
Killer tune.
You say you'll wear your cheerleader dress if I wear my leather jeans. Baby, that's a deal. Talking like that, honey, this phone's gonna melt for real. This is a social call. I ain't talking none of that off the wall.
all. Been talking business all day, now I'm ready to play. So come on, baby, talk that talk. Been talking business all day, I'm wanting to play. Come on, baby, talk that talk.
All right, Social Call. Man, I think this one's another tune that is pure Hank. Vocals excellent. Song's fantastic. I love the primal drum sounds. The production of the drum sounds is just fantastic. It makes this, I think it really makes the song come full circle. I think it's one of the best songs on the album. You want to talk about a walk down memory lane. Hank is going back to a time when phones had cords and 900 numbers in the back of the dirty books. You know what I mean? No complaints. This is some fine country music. Between great and excellent, I gave it a 7.5. Chris, what'd you think about Social Call?
Yeah, like I said, this is his lane, man. I love the kind of outlaw, little dirty kind of sound he's got going here. And a little pimp going on, you know. Oh, yeah. This is his style, man. I love these kind of songs by him. Probably my sleeper, I'd say. Anthony asked, if anybody wonders, Anthony said, hey, pick this part of the song. You at least sent me a screen grab, so I kind of went to where you said and pulled that part. It was a great part of the song. Yeah, I'm a 7. It's a great song.
Awesome. Anthony, Social Call.
It's a favorite on the album, man. And it's one of my favorite by Hank as of now. So I gave it a love on Apple Music just to make sure I could hear it again in a random playlist.
There you go.
It just works, man, from the opening riff to the last one. Hank sounds great on vocals. His voice is just perfect for a song like this. Enjoy the rambunctious nature of it, too. It's just this Hank being Hank. Like the other song where him being a pop star did not work, this is Hank being the rebel we all know and love him for. So I gave it a 9. I think it's outstanding. So really digging
awesome,
this
man.
One. So.
That's fantastic. All right. Track number 9, You Brought Me Down to Earth.
And she showed me what love is worth. Now the social scene, they'll have to get by without me. 'Cause you brought me down. Made me understand the value of a wedding band. Yes, you brought me down to earth.
All right, You Brought Me Down to Earth. Now, this is pure country right here. Song is sung from a heartfelt sentiment and sang in a fashion that only Hank can do it justice. Steel guitar, soft bass, acoustic guitar, and the vocals of Hank Williams Jr. When listening to this song, I swear I could hear George Jones in there. Sounding so similar. This song's outstanding. I gave this one a 9. Chris, You Brought Me Down to Earth.
Well, I went ahead and flushed I'm Just a Man. I want to keep you guys on your toes on that. There's not much difference between those two songs, in my opinion. Just kind of drags. It's mournful. I mean, you're right. It is that George Jones style country, but I don't think he's got the vocals those guys have. I'd skip it almost all the time. I go to 4.
Anthony, You Brought Me Down to Earth.
Ah, man, it's back to classic country, and it works almost perfectly. Hank sells it with his voice once again. If you like country music, then you should love this one. It's almost like he's channeling George Jones. I give it a 9. I think it's outstanding. So
there we go. There we go.
If you like old country music, not
it is country it is old country
in general.
This is what
old school country, I should say.
Yeah, right. This is the first generation country or second generation country. I guess you could call it. First generation was pure acoustic, but you know, it's definitely it harkens back to the rise of Appalachian country music, for sure.
Like I said, I think it makes me think of my dad when I hear songs like this, because that's what he's into.
I It makes me think of my dad too. Don't feel bad.
So I think maybe that helps a lot of times with my ratings on some of these, because it gives me that. When I hear a lot of these songs like this, I'm like, what would my dad would think of this song? That's the first thing I think of, you know. So when you get those kind of memories mixed in, it's hard to really hate a song like that, you know. Plus, it's a great damn song. So,
all right, well, let's wrap this album up. Final track, Tuesday's Gone. Hit it, Chris.
Outside of my door, you see, the Lord took my woman today. Lordy, Tuesday's gone with the wind. My baby. The wind train along.
All right, Tuesday's Gone. Man, hands down, it's one of the best Skinner covers out there, I think. I've always loved Hank's version of this song, and I think it's timeless. I think Hank owns it. Really, really great way to close out this record. And I swear to God, I think, yeah, without a doubt, he brought in Gary Rossington from Lynyrd Skynyrd to play on this song as a closing. So, I mean, that's fantastic. I think excellent ending to the album for an excellent song. My score's an 8. Chris, what'd you think about Tuesday's Gone?
Well, it's definitely in his wheelhouse. And I think it was a good way for him to close the album. I don't think it's as good as Skynyrd's version, obviously. But that said, it's not too far off the mark, so I can't give it a real high score because I don't think it is as good as the original. But I gave it 6.5 because I do like the song, and I feel like it's a pretty good closer for this album. So, you know, that's between very good and great. Seems fair.
Well, how would you rate Skynyrd's version?
Probably about a 9. I'm not sure it's perfection for them, but it's
a damn solid good song. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, fair enough. Anthony, Tuesday's Gone.
This is Song Facts, one of the few song facts on here tonight. It says, like Ruby Tuesday by the Rolling Stones. Tuesday in this song is the name of a girl. It's about going away and leaving her behind. It said it was written by lead singer Ronnie Van Zant and guitarist Alan Collins. It's another I Must Be Going Now song on Lynyrd Skynyrd's first album, similar in theme to Freebird. There was a train track near the place where the band rehearsed. The sound of the trains inspired lead singer Ronnie Van Zant to write the first line, "Train Roll On Down the Line." And notable artists who've covered it, Metallica and Fish, among Hank Williams Jr., have covered this song. So I think we all know Metallica is, but I didn't know Fish covered this song. Interesting.
I didn't
to hear
care
what they did. It'd be interesting what they did on it, though. Kind of a unique band.
They're odd, for sure.
You know, me personally, man, I said nailed it. Great cover version of this classic Skynyrd song. No issues, no complaints. Really like what Hank did with this song. Great way to close out an album that starts strong and finishes strong, too. I gave it a 9. I think it's an outstanding cover of this song. So
awesome.
So awesome. I would base right, that 9 is for cover. It's not like for the Skynyrd song itself. It's probably a 9, too. But this is a 9 to consider the cover version of it. He does a great job on the cover. Right. So
you think he does as good as Skynyrd does on this song?
Not as good, but I'm saying
there shouldn't be a 9.
I'm putting this in, trying to put it so as far as cover songs go, if I'm rating cover songs that have been done throughout the zeitgeist of rock and roll and country music, this is a 9. It's a really high on the cover songs list. I would rate it differently if I was listening to Lynyrd Skynyrd, maybe closer to perfection for Lynyrd Skynyrd. So
yeah, now that I think about it, it might have been a 10 if on Skynyrd's version. It's classic. It probably is a 10. Skynyrd's
absolutely
version.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, I'm gonna wrap it up with some final thoughts. This record, first of all, I'm glad I picked this album. This is something that goes back to my young childhood. I remember listening to this record a lot, probably about 1989, 1990. just after it was released. I remember going over and playing pool at Shooters and this album being on constant rotation down there. As weird as that sounds. But it takes me back to that memory. I remember tons of stuff. I remember wanting to go see Hank and glad I didn't because he walked out of Freedom Hall that year. But not Freedom Hall, but Viking Hall. He came out and played three songs and so drunk he couldn't continue and he quit. So, but he gave him a free show in Knoxville if he wanted to go down there and see it. But, you know, it's Hank Jr. I think it's in a snapshot in time. This was late 80s, mid to late 80s, Hank Williams Jr. And it's different from a lot of his stuff. It's not outside his realm. He had a couple songs that were mediocre, in my opinions, on this record. Well, not really mediocre. They were good. They just weren't nothing that stood out. You know, it's not above the playing field. He was on average for a couple tunes on this. Overall, my score came out to be a 7.4, and I'm good with that. I think this album is a great listen and well worth anybody's, 45 minutes to give this thing a rocking out, you know, hardcore, crank it in your ears listen. Chris, what are your final thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I'm glad we listened to this. I mean, listen, we shouldn't always have, like, love fests on everything. It's good to have some differing opinions on here. This was probably one of the weaker albums we've reviewed, if I'm being honest. Here's the thing. I think when he does the Southern rock stuff, it's pretty solid. But this thing had a couple of those songs, two or three songs that really fall into that category. A lot of it was dated. And then a lot of it had that, like, George Jones sound to it, which, you know, I'm not really a huge fan of. So, to me, I'm looking at my notes here. I must have been in a mood when I wrote this stuff. You want me to read what I'm not sure that I really feel this way.
Read it.
I was like, I really don't think we'd even know who this guy is if it wasn't for the nepotism in Nashville. I feel like he got, he's kind of like Dale Earnhardt Jr. Like, everybody probably loves him because of his dad and, like, not that he's bad, but he's just, like, pretty average. And I don't know, man. That's kind of how I was, like, looking at this guy. People love Hank Sr., right? And they probably wanted to give this guy every chance to root for him, I guess. Yeah, I don't know if I feel that way. He had some good songs. But the stuff I like by him is, like, the If the South Would Have Won or the All My Rowdy Friends or Country Boy Can't Survive. Kind of those, like, gritty, Southern rock's the right word, but, like, those kind of songs, you know what I mean? That's kind of what I like from this guy. I don't like the I'm Just a Man's and the You Brought Me Down to Earth. It's not my thing. I don't know. It's pretty low score. Give me 5.7 overall. I'll bump it to a 6. I think it's very good in spots, so that's probably fair for me.
Fair enough. Anthony, what are your final thoughts on this record?
What was your final rating, Jimmy?
7.4.
That's exactly what mine was, 7.4. Actually. 7.4.
Oh, nice.
And my cat wandered in the room, so I couldn't hear your final soliloquy there.
That's okay,
so
man.
I was just curious. This is a solid album, man. I did enjoy listening to most of it. There were a few rough songs that didn't work for me, but this is late 80s Hank. This is kind of what you get. If you're a bigger Hank fan, I think you could probably appreciate his later work. Like me with Buffett, where I can appreciate certain albums that other people don't appreciate as much because I'm a big fan of his music. This is probably one of those as a listener of an album, you probably wouldn't bring somebody in on a first listen with this one. You'd probably make, one of his classic ones. But I think I disagree with Chris a little bit with saying Hank is, honestly, I think some of maybe Hank Sr. is known a little more because of Hank Williams Jr. Hank Sr. has some classic tunes, but I don't know if he's lived long enough to become the star that he has become. He had a few really phenomenal songs, but Hank Jr. really took off in the 70s and became popular, and I think he's helped to keep Hank Sr.'s name around. So I think it's a little bit of a reverse in a lot of ways because Hank has been huge in country for many, many years throughout the years. And his son's probably getting popular just because of him too, so... You know, he's a good one too, Hank 3. So
I mean, Chris, I want before we go any further, I was looking through some of his accolades real fast. On the release of Wild Streak, just so you know, he got CMA's Entertainer of the Year that year. The year prior, Entertainer of the Year. The year prior, Entertainer of the Year. The year after, he did not make Entertainer of the Year nominated. So, I mean, this was a time when Hank was dominating country music. Just so you know, in the grand scheme of stuff, Hank Williams Jr. was country radio. He didn't care.
I know he was popular.
And he didn't care. But
we're not bagging on
say
you.
He wasn't
we're
popular.
Not I'm not bagging on you. I just want to let you know the realistics of what happened during this time frame when Wild Streak came out. And,
well, both y'all gave us a 7-4. That's not a really high score for either one of you guys.
Well, it's, my that four.
And he got Entertainer of the Year for this album? I don't know about that. There's one song on this album, let's just be 100% honest, man, like that really made it.
That's all for a lot of country artists I've noticed. So like the George Jones one that I want us to get into, He Stopped Loving Her Today is the only hit. I mean, you'll know the other ones probably if you're a fan, but all those country artists did that back in the day. Like the first song is the one you know, or the second song, and the rest of them are just not. I don't know. It's weird.
So I don't dispute that he was liked in Nashville in the late 80s. I'm sure he was. But I don't know if you deserve Entertainer of the Year for one song. I mean,
what year was that, Jimmy?
Well, he got it right before he released this album as an 88. So, I mean, he was, it's crazy to think
he was.
Speaks
more about country music in the 80s or late 80s is what I think.
It could. And country probably was struggling.
It really kicked it up a notch in the 90s, you know.
I don't think it was struggling. I think it was building up like a locomotive in the 80s, and in the 90s it exploded.
Well, I think there were some artists like Randy Travis and George Strait.
You got George Strait that was pumping them out.
Dwight Yoakam.
Randy Travis, Dwight Yoakam, all these up-and-comers from the 80s that absolutely just...
Yeah, this guy's a lot better than Hank. I mean, let's just be honest, man. Like, those guys are a lot better than Hank.
You think 70s to 80s to 90s. 80s was sort of a bridge gap.
It was progression. It was a progression, dude.
80s was the tough... 80s and 90s are two tough decades to play music in.
Alabama. Who got the 80s? I mean...
But you look at the musical landscape in the 80s and the 90s. You know, the electronic sort of sound was popular in the 80s and hair metal. 90s, you had grunge. I mean, that's a tough decade for artists to navigate. So I can imagine if one or the other had a little bit of a struggle with country or rock in those times. So, but.
Agreed. But anyway, I mean, we're semi-close. I mean, Chris, I get it. You just didn't gel with you.
Happens, I like his outlaw stuff. I do. I think that's fun music. I like fun music, man. I don't feel like some of that later stuff is fun at all.
See, the older I get, the more I like the more classic country sound and stuff. And I think it, like in Anthony's case, my memory is my dad before he left. You know, I lost my dad at 10 years old and I didn't see him for almost 4 or 5 years. And then he came back into our lives. So, my memories are being a child hearing all the whatever records he had back then, the 8-tracks and stuff. And it was a lot of this classic stuff. It was, you know, the Hank Juniors, the George Joneses, the Conway Twitties, the Alabamas. He was huge Alabama. He loved Meat Loaf. He just liked music in general. He loved this, you know, music. And that's what I remembered him. And then he was gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't realize my dad was a big AC/DC fan either because he never listened to that when I was a kid. But come to find out as I got older, he's a freaking huge AC/DC fan. Had no clue in that until, you know, I was an adult, until I was like in my 20s, I think, which is weird, but
AC/DC,
he just loved that
man.
Stuff.
They're looking old these days. I've seen a few shots.
Oh, God, they look rough. Jesus Christ. But they are pushing 80. I mean,
they are old.
Well, I think Angus Young is in his late 60s, isn't he?
Nah, he's got to be older than that, dude. Sure.
According to Google yesterday, he was 68, so.
That's it?
He looks old, man.
Wow. He does.
A lot of drinking, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. A lot of drinking.
He looks rough. I didn't realize how small that guy was. I saw like a video of him coming out of some AC/DC club or something. He was like the shortest guy in the crowd, man, by a long shot. Yeah, I mean, I'm borderline like dwarf size, you know? Like
he's short, dude. For real. He probably doesn't come up the middle of my chest. Seriously.
Probably not. Yeah.
Well, he's got to be that short. Oh, my God. All right, guys. So I know that we're wrapping this thing up. We're taking a little bit of a holiday break, if you will. Our Halloween episode, we're going to be dropping the 29th, I think, is the game plan. We're going to be doing a Rob Zombie album, Hellbilly Deluxe. As long as we can, we're going to shoot for that. And then, as you guys, for those who've been listening for a while, we start our country music month this year. It's probably going to go all the way to Christmas based on our schedules, but still yet, we got three more country music albums coming up. Chris, your next pick. I guess we got to do a pick for you, or do you want to wait to do it for
Halloween?
Here's
the thing. Like, Anthony hijacked my pick. That was supposed to be my pick, but he's like, we're doing Rob Zombie.
I did not say we're doing Rob Zombie. I said we should do a Halloween. Are you guys okay with that?
I thought we were all in unit. We don't have to.
It's fine. It's good. It is a good pick, right? Mine just happened to land on Halloween, and Anthony's the Halloween guy, so I'm fine with that. That doesn't bother me. I will say it's been a while since I've made a pick.
Do you want to make a pick? We can do that instead of me and Jimmy can knock a quick one out.
I think that would be fine. It's possible I'll be traveling during that time, so I may not be able to jump on that episode, but we'll see one way or the other. I'll try to make it if I can.
Well, if that's the case, we may change it up. Anthony, you saw my text yesterday, right, or the day before swapping out. We can do King Diamond since Chris won't be here. If Chris won't be here, we'll do King Diamond if you want to, because we'd never do it with Chris.
King Diamond, wow. Mm.
And it'd be perfect Halloween stuff.
It would be.
I think Rob Zombie's perfect Halloween stuff. Actually.
It is. It is with you. It is with you.
Y'all don't like the zombie?
No. I like the zombie, but you would not be able to get through the king.
I'm just gonna put that right. Ice Nine Kills, which I thought we'd do in a bonus episode for some Ice Nine Kills.
Oh Lord!
So I listened to a few of theirs. Man, it's it'd get worse treatment than what I just threw out here. So
that's all good, man. It's all good. I mean, look, it's all in how you hear it. I don't care how you hear it. It's something I liked when I was a kid, and it's something I still occasionally listen to this day. So that's how I roll. Yeah.
Fair enough.
All right, guys. Well, let's wrap this thing up for the Audible Ecstasy Podcast. This is Jimmy.
This is Chris.
This is Anthony.
And this is it.
I've been sick, y'all. I've been sick, y'all. Heartbroken.